You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Hey, listeners, welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. Before I get into introducing my guest today, just kind of giving a little disclaimer for this episode. Today is a little bit different format. If you could see where I am, I'm not in my typical spot for recording in my office. I'm actually standing and baby wearing my 6 month old. And, I thought about, should I try to reschedule this episode with my guest? But I figured out, I just wanted to kind of honor the reality of where life is for me right now and just, not try to sugarcoat what's going on. I think a lot of times we see other moms and we think, things must be so simple for them. And for me right now, it's not. Our babysitter unexpectedly had to quit yesterday morning, right before she was supposed to come, due to a health emergency, which I totally understand, but it has made for some stress in our household the last 24 hours and trying to figure out what the plan is. So for today, we have an extra little guest here, Ellie. So you may hear her in the background as my guest and I are talking. Again, if this is where you're in a similar season where you're like, okay, I have to baby wear to get things done, or I have to have kids in the same room as me doing homework or playing or at a soccer game while I'm trying to get things done, that is okay. So you're not alone. So today I am joined by my guest, Beth Klein. Beth is a businesswoman turned licensed marriage and family therapist who owns a solo therapy practice. She sees clients in person in the Twin Cities and virtually in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and South Carolina. Beth specializes in helping professional women break through anxiety, relationship, and career issues that are holding them back. She especially likes helping female leaders and those striving to be leaders because she wants women to have more influence in this country. Beth, welcome to today's episode. I'm really excited for us to get a chance to talk today.
Yes, it's great to meet you, and it's great to be on this and great to be there with your daughter as well. What was her name?
Her name is Elizabeth, but we call her Ellie. So we'll see. Right before we hit record, Ellie decided to put a load in her diaper. So what? We'll hope that she decides to either just be quiet. Maybe she'll take a nap. Right now, she's in that stage of revolting naps unless she's being held or nursing. So,
oh my goodness. Okay.
We'll yeah. So yeah, I'm really excited for us to dive into our topic in a little bit. But as listeners of the show know, I always ask guests to bring us into your story and kind of share with us a little bit of what led to you becoming a therapist. What led to you saying, I think I want to do this?
Okay, gosh, it was kind of a long road. I'm a preacher's kid. So my dad was at ELCA.
Me too.
ELCA Lutheran minister.
I'm a double PK, both mom and dad, Presbyterian, PCUSA.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, yep. I bet there's a lot of us out there.
Yep.
And my mom was a music teacher and also mostly a stay-at-home mom. So I was exposed to a lot of things as a preacher's kid. We'd get phone calls at home of people that were in trouble, and I'd answer the phone because at that time I had a landline. And I was also very interested in, I was kind of interested in psychology. I read books about, a psychiatrist curing a child or something. Mm. I would have no idea what the name of that book was. But I also was good in math and I was good in science. So I decided when I went to college that I would be, I thought maybe I'll start majoring in math. I wasn't sure what I was going to major in. So I started out in math. And then at the time, computer science was a big deal. And so I thought, hey, let's try that. And so a lot of the math majors went into computer science and stayed in that field, but also went to Norway my junior year in college.
Oh, wow.
And so majored in Scandinavian studies as well.
Wow.
So when I graduate, but what's interesting, well, I did take psychology in college, but it kind of overwhelmed me. I did well in it, but it overwhelmed me. And so I decided to, when I was graduating, I'm like, do I want to go work in a or work in or own a yarn shop because I learned how to knit in Norway, or do I want to go into my field, which was computers? Well, I decided to go into my field, and I did really well in the field, and I liked it. I liked the problem solving part of it.
Yeah.
I also worked at a company that I could travel a lot, so I got kind of some adventure, which was fun. So that I had kids while I was working, and I had them in daycare. So then I was divorced when I was four, when my kids were 4 and 5. And so I saw a therapist. And so I experienced that for the first time. I saw a therapist and I experienced that environment, and I really liked it. I liked learning about myself and discovering, you know, who I was. And
sure.
And then let's see. So then I continued to work while my kids were, you know, while I was raising my kids, and I had really good daycares. And I did really well in my field. I ended up working at US Bank, which is in Milwaukee, but there's also a US Bank and headquarters in Minneapolis. So, and that's, I live in St. Paul. So then I was a project manager on a project, and the project was canceled. And so I had a lot of time while they were trying to figure out what to do next. I had lots of time where I wasn't doing much at work.
Yeah.
So my kids were in middle school then, and I had started realizing that I really wanted to do more of the people profession. So it was kind of a good time for me to explore that. One of the things that happened at work that it really made me realize was I was in a meeting with a project manager came in, and he said right away, he said, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. My mom died over the weekend. And I just went, whoa, like what? And I wanted to talk about it. And, you know, I asked him a couple of questions, but it was very clear that we're just working on the project, and he was very professional. And I was just like, I can't concentrate. I'm like, I'm too into what's going on with him, and I want to help him. And so then that was one of the things. There were some other things too. It's funny that I took a Dale Carnegie course, and not sure how that led me to it, but I think it led me to, they had you talk about yourself in front of everybody. So I think that kind of helped me realize that I wanted to work more in interpersonal stuff. And so when this time came, I had a lot of time, and I started searching for career change, and I went and saw a career counselor. And we did all those I'm not a career counselor in that technical way. You know, they have all those tests that they do, the battery.
Sure.
So I did all that with someone, and she was actually private pay, and I don't even know where I found her. But it was really kind of neat, and it led me to that this field would probably be good for me. So then I interviewed a couple people. I interviewed a friend of a friend who was a psychologist. I interviewed another person and decided that I wanted to go to school, and I went to my local school, the school closest to my house, which was Mount Mary College, which was actually a very good program for.
Yeah. So how old were your kids by the time you made that transition?
My kids were, I figured 13 and 14.
Okay.
And so they were pretty independent by then. I, being a single mom, they were 4 and 5 when I got divorced.
Yeah.
So being a single mom, I think they were pretty independent.
Yeah.
I actually had let's see, after I started, I had a boyfriend, and he was a wonderful guy. He still is my boyfriend, but he's a wonderful guy, and he was great helping out with the kids and stuff. But since I went to a close college, I was able to go there at night, first classes. I'd get up in the morning and I'd study at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be there reading and studying, and they could get themselves to school. And
yeah. So were you going to school and still working at that time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that balance like of your single mom? And even though like maybe there's not as high touch needs, say, as like an infant, mm-hmm. teenagers still have like a lot of needs in just a different way. And
right.
then you're working and going to school. Like, how did that feel?
Oh, I loved reading about the subject matter so
yeah.
much that was such a joy for me. I also had worked at this company for several years at the time, probably 10 years. And I had the same manager the whole time. And she was very, I told her that I was doing this.
Okay.
And she was supportive.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah. She was supportive. And I had established, you know, reliability. And so she trusted that I would keep doing that.
Yeah.
But I would take I'd take it lunch hour and I'd go study then. So with the kids, the kids would come home before I got home, and then, but they were used to that. They were in daycare. They might have been in daycare. They were in daycare up to a certain age.
Yeah.
After school program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I would have dinner with them.
Yeah.
And then I go off to school.
Yeah.
Not every night though, and then I'd be with them at night when they, you know, teenagers, I guess preteens, teenagers seem to really want to talk right before bed.
Yeah. And were your kids those that like you didn't have to pull it out from them? They would like want to share with you.
No, they they weren't that great in sharing, although we were pretty. I was the kind of mom that at meal times we do the plus and minus.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing. And so we talk about our day, and I kind of, you know, talk a lot more than others, but not so much about feelings.
Yeah.
So I would have to just be available. I guess what I always say is to be available when they come around. I have boys, so there's two boys.
Yeah.
And when they come around, kind of sense that they need something, and then be available to them
and
talk. So,
well, I know one of the things we're going to talk about today is something that you kind of mentioned a little bit of kind of reconciling this idea of what you thought motherhood was going to look like based off of kind of what you witnessed in your own household growing up, and then reconciling that with, okay, what does it mean to be a mom, but now a working mom, or even a mom who's changing careers in, you know, as my kids are aging. What did you, I guess, going before you had kids, or maybe even before you had a career, because I think you said you started work before them. What was your idea of what motherhood was either going to be or supposed to be?
Yeah. Well, my mom, my parents met at college, but she ended up starting out as a stay-at-home mom. She didn't go to work in her field until my sister was older. I was the second oldest of four. So she was always around. I'm a younger baby boomer, kind of a between Gen X and baby boomer. So if you've seen some of those TikTok videos, you know, we were kind of feral, but we would run around outside and, you know, all day.
Yeah.
But she was always there if we, you know, we'd come home for lunch, or we'd come home, you know, for, you know, obviously dinner. We'd have dinner with my dad, and, you know, mm-hmm. that's formal. And then, but during the day, my mom would go visit friends sometimes. She had a group of friends that she'd go hang out at the house. I think mid-afternoon they'd go sit and chat, like have coffee. And so you'd always know where she was, you know, you needed her, and you could always interrupt. And her friends were also very, you know, like I got to know them.
Yeah.
So I guess I thought of motherhood as being available,
yeah,
you know, all the time. My mom was also quite, like, she's kind of politically active. I mean, she did different volunteer stuff. Yeah, so she instilled a lot of things on us. And so I guess part of it, the reason I really wanted to go into working, because from a young age, I wasn't going to be a, I might not have even been a mom. Like, I was thinking I might not be a mom.
Okay. Yeah. That wasn't necessarily like something that you're like, this could happen. It may not happen, but it wasn't like, this is where I'm putting identity necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was more career driven. And I think it's because, well, my mom, but going to college, meant that I wanted to go to college. And even though my mom was a stay-at-home mom, I think my aunt, so my aunt was a working woman when, until she was in her 30s, and then she got married, and then she, I believe she also was a stay-at-home. She actually didn't have kids, but she was kind of a stay-at-home wife of a minister. So, but she was a really good role model for me. Like she seemed, oh gosh, I shouldn't, I'm really aging myself, but the Mary Tyler Moore Show was an influence. And my aunt reminded me of Mary Tyler Moore because she lived in Minneapolis. And oh my gosh, and she wore the same kind of clothes. And so I started, and some of my mom's friends were working women. There was a woman down the street that was a single working woman. And so I guess I kind of liked that.
That you had that model for you that,
yes,
like a lot of other girls maybe didn't necessarily have, but you had a model of motherhood as a stay-at-home mom, but also what does it look like to be a woman that works and isn't. And I don't say this like in a bad way, but like isn't just at home, like just at home, there's a lot at home, but that is also working outside of the home. You had that model of both of those.
Yeah. So then, so when I, you know, I worked for a few years and I decided not to have kids, you know, until, you know, I got married when I was 24, I believe, 25. And we decided not to have kids right away. And then when I became, when I was 30, I started, or 29, I guess, I started having that, you know, bug to have kids.
Yeah.
And really wanted kids. So we did have kids at 30, and had my first son at 30, and my next son is 17 months younger. So he's
really close.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden that what I was brought up with just totally hit. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to be a stay-at-home mom, you know? And it was like, you know, career and all that, you know, dump that. And so I did get 12 weeks off with each kid.
Okay.
So the first one, I got 12 weeks off. Unfortunately, we couldn't afford for me to do that.
Yeah.
So I was the primary breadwinner. So I did go back to work, and it was, you know, it was hard. I mean, it was, you know, the whole thing, like crying and at your desk and that. But I had a really good daycare.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah. One of the daycares was my sister, my brother lived in town, and him and his wife, my sister-in-law, they had a daycare that they really liked. And so I had my kids go to that daycare.
Yeah.
And so that felt really good. I learned how to do it. And then what was interesting is I think my dad was a big part of two of me being a career woman. I think he liked that idea. He was so excited when my teacher, I think it was my fourth grade teacher, told him that I was good in science.
Oh,
he was like,
yeah.
Oh, you're good in science. And so when I went into the, you know, the field that I went into, he thought that was great.
Yeah.
And I think part of it, he had tossed around being an accountant.
Okay.
And so he, but then he became a minister. So it was different.
Yeah.
So they'd come to visit. He was torn, I think, because they'd come to visit. And because I was a single mom, I decided to just not fold my clean clothes. They're just in the clothes basket.
Yeah.
My kids, even at, as toddlers, you know, this is at, especially after I was a single mom, they were 4 and 5. They would, at that age, they'd go get their own underwear out of the clothes basket.
Yeah.
And yes, I'd try. I kind of would try maybe harder than I should have. Like, I'd be like, I gotta be, I've gotta have my house as clean as my mom's. I have to have the
Sure,
all the
sure.
bills folded and all the standards that my mom set.
Yeah.
But I was in a group of divorced women, and I had some really good role models there
Yeah.
that really encouraged me to, there's a counseling experience in a way, but really encouraged me to, be who I am. Be,
Yeah.
don't do extra. Don't stress over
Yeah.
extra things. And so I took their advice, and so I decided to just have my clothes basket. Then my dad would, so then my parents would come visit, and my dad would tease me about this clothes basket, like in a, I don't know, I felt like it was a negative way. And
Yeah.
it's like, well, Dad, I mean, you really, how it's like, you really support me as a working woman,
Right.
and you don't want me to move home as a, a lot of single moms might try to move home, right?
Sure.
Move back with their parents. And I thought about that. I was like, oh,
Yeah.
but he didn't want that. He encouraged me to be strong and, as a single mom. And yet he teased me about this clothes basket. And I'm like,
Yeah.
So.
They, how do you like, it's almost like trying to get other people to get on board with like this part of yourself that you've
Yes.
reconciled of like, look, this is what works for me. This is what works for my family. Like, this is not a negative on you and your choices. This is just how I'm choosing to operate. And I just need support here. I don't need criticism.
Right. And I find a lot of times when you spend time trying to get people on board,
Yeah.
like my
Yeah.
mom too, as a single mom, she didn't understand a lot of things. But she was really willing to learn, and she was a great listener, and she was actually very supportive of me.
Yeah.
But I know there was a lot of things she didn't get. She didn't get being a
Yeah.
single mom. She didn't get the working. But so, and then even switching careers, then my parents are like, what are you doing? Why are you doing
Right.
this? Like, and I'm like,
Right.
well,
Right.
I'm going into the people profession. You guys should be happy for me.
Yeah.
What are you doing? So, and then friends too. Yeah, there's just a lot
Yeah.
sometimes, but you got, I guess, I think you have to do what what's in your heart and your soul, and
Yeah.
your values, and then find the supporters that are going to be cheerleaders for you.
Absolutely.
And so I did have a lot of that. I always had really good friends during my, single
Yeah.
years, my business years, my like, I have safe friends that I could just tell everything to.
Yeah.
Coworkers, not always the case. And then through the counseling path.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, like what you're talking about of like sometimes we're having to like it takes a lot, I think, for us as women and then as moms to, I don't know if it's confidence, but like to have, maybe it is confidence, like to have the confidence to say, this is the decision I'm making. This is the choice I'm making, whether it is I'm choosing to not get married, to have children, to change careers, to, leave corporate world and go into private practice, like whatever the choice is, right? And so it takes a lot for us to get to a place of like, okay, I feel confident in this. And people don't always see like our thought process, right? Or like our process to get to that decision. And so then when we're like sharing it with others, we're wanting this, like, yes, absolutely. Like, I'm here to support you. But we don't always get that. And it sometimes it's we don't get that from family. We don't get that from friends. We don't get that from larger society. Like there's a variety of different places. And I think it's interesting where you said there were certain people trying to get on board and almost a lot of convincing. And I think there definitely are some people that we need to convince, right? Like if our partner or our spouse, like if a decision we're making is going to have a huge impact on them, we may need to do a little bit more convincing. But like with your parents, where you're like, look, this is how I'm just choosing to run my household. if you don't want me to do that, then like I'm going to have to move back home or I'm going to have to quit my job. And you don't want me to do those. So this is what we're doing, right? And I think it's just an interesting thing of kind of recognizing like where are the places that we're giving our bandwidth to convince. Because I think if it's people in our more immediate circles, absolutely. Like there may be more effort there. But like if it's larger societal shifts that like, yeah, maybe it's worth, you know, saying something, but also at what cost to you do you need to stand up? And I'll give an example because this is just off the top of my mind. This happened just this week. So we're going to be moving this summer with my husband's job with the military. And in a Facebook group in the area we're moving to, I just asked the question, hey, just getting a ballpark idea, what does childcare cost up there? Because we're just trying to figure out finances of this move and everything. That's all I ask. What's the cost? And the majority of the people were extremely helpful. This is what we pay. This is average. And then I had one person comment, well, this was 20 years ago, but my husband and I made the decision that I wasn't going to work because childcare was just so expensive. And you really have to think about, like, do you want somebody else raising your kids?
Ugh.
And I was in a very vulnerable state that day to begin with. Yeah, and I was just, I like texted my girlfriends and I showed my husband. I'm like, there's so many things wrong with that statement. So many things wrong. And I was in a place where I thought about firing something back, you know, in a comment. I don't typically engage with that, but that was one of those places where I'm like, I want to say something, but I don't have much bandwidth to convince, you know, there's a lot of other people maybe I need to convince of something or I need to just get on board with me. And she's not one of them. Right. So like, that's a larger societal piece that like the work I do, the way I live my life, that can be the influence, but I don't need to have this interaction or exchange with this individual who I don't know, I probably never will meet that like to convince that like, no, it's a good thing that I am a working mom and that there are just a lot of other systems at play that are working against me. And I don't need you to be taking my choices as well.
Yes. Oh, so much so. I've noticed there's a lot of people in a group that will, that support you, but don't always say.
Yeah.
It's almost like the one that speaks up, you know, that's bold and speaks up and tells her opinion, which was that woman, right?
Yeah.
But I always try to remind myself there's so many more that are there. They're maybe just not ready to, you know, put it all out there. And so, but you, if you can find those, you know, maybe not in a Facebook group, but like in, you know, in other ways, I always kind of found people like that. Like it's, you know, a friend of my mom's was very progressive in terms of that, 'cause she had been divorced actually. And she was in the town that I lived in. So it turned out that she was a real good support for me because she was like, yeah, I get it. And go for it and do this. And
we've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. As a therapist, business owner, and a mom, managing your business finances effectively is crucial. That's where Bank Novo comes in. Bank Novo isn't just a bank account, it's your partner in growth. With free checking and a range of features tailored to small businesses like yours, like no hidden fees or minimum balances, Bank Novo makes managing your finances simple and stress-free. But what truly sets Novo apart is its compatibility with the Simple Profit method. Whether you're just starting out or looking to streamline your financial processes, Bank Novo seamlessly integrates with Simple Profit, helping you track expenses, managing invoices, and maximizing your profits effortlessly. And for listeners of this show, when you sign up for a free Bank Novo account at bit.ly/NovoAshley and enter the referral code AshleyComages, all one word, after making a $100 deposit, you'll receive $40 as a sign-up bonus. Yep, you heard that right. $40 just for taking control of your finances with Bank Novo. So fellow therapists, take the next step towards financial empowerment. Join me in choosing Bank Novo and unlock the financial tools you need to thrive in your practice. Was there any part of you that you had to really either let go of or like fight through in kind of reconciling this of this is what I've been shown motherhood looks like or quote unquote is supposed to be? And I'm also working, but I'm still trying to live up to that expectation. Like, was there a, like a breaking point or any kind of shift of like moving away from that? Or were you kind of from the get-go of like, no, I'm just going to do this differently?
Yeah, I think there was. I at first, when I first got divorced, I wanted to find someone else, kind of.
Yeah.
I think unconsciously to support me.
Yeah.
And to you know, rescue me and maybe allow me to do that, like be that
sure
single mom or to be that stay-at-home mom. And I remember having a therapist at the time. Of course, it's always and she. I remember her saying to me, and I was like, oh, God, why do I have to do this? It's too much. And, and she's like, Beth, the man on the white horse is not coming.
Mm.
And I'm like, yeah. So basically by telling me that, I don't know if that's the best way to say it,
yeah.
But by telling me that, it was like, you have to do this. This
yeah.
is you. You are doing this. This is you. Your life is the way it is. You can't, you know, pining over something different is not okay. So that helped. And then I had this wonderful daycare that just, you know, brought me joy. It was, there was a daycare. It was actually attached to a nursing home.
Oh, interesting.
And the grandmas and grandpas would come by. They call them the grandpas and grandpas. They'd come by once in a while and play with the kids.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a cool, neat thing. And so there were a lot of things I thought were neat. And there was, I think it was Miss Blue, and she potty trained my child, which I felt, you know, there was this tinge of, oh gosh, this is, I'm a bad mom because I'm somebody's child. I'm not doing it. But she was so loving and just so wonderful. And, but I think society, you know, and it wasn't in your face messages. It was kind of that societal hum.
Yeah.
That kind of kept kind of fighting me, like, no, you know, this is wrong. They're going to be damaged. And so I think that really helped, having that daycare. And so that was, I think once I felt really secure with that.
Yeah.
And then as my kids were growing, it was kind of obvious that they were doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that really helped. So I think it was kind of, you know, learning by doing it.
Sure. I mean, it really sounds like you cultivated such a support network around you through your own friends, through like your daycare, through, you know, people that your mom knew, just people that really were supportive of you and that you could turn to, whether it was for emotional support or tangible physical support, that like, you know, you had a village in a lot of ways, it sounds like. And just even if it was that emotional support of where you're like reconciling like what you thought things would be like with what they were, that you really had those people to really support you in that.
Yes, I did. And I was bold enough to reach out, you know. But I got some good advice, I think, from the therapists, and that small group was of women, weren't therapists, but there was a woman that was kind of a, especially wise or something in there. And, you know, I think I was encouraged to reach out to people. And so I had a, you know, There's a lot of people when I think back, I'm so grateful for being for me. And I'm not necessarily in connection with them now because our lives have kind of gone different ways. But they were willing to help me out, and I helped them out. Like there was a single mom that helped, you know, we'd talk on the phone while we were working and stuff, like doing housework. And we'd, you know, complain about all the things and give each other advice. So lots of things. I did a divorce. We went to a divorce Bible camp.
Interesting.
It was like a long weekend. We did that about 3 different years and met, and I actually ended up meeting someone who's now a best friend of mine from many years ago.
Yeah.
The kids are 31 and 30. So, but yeah, so that was neat. And then she was in this Parents Without Partners group. So a lot of it had to do with being a single mom, you know, needing that support. I think when you're married, though, you need that girlfriend support too.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, because there's differences. And
so tell me a little bit about your practice. And I'm curious, when you decided to go back to school to become a counselor, did you know you wanted to go into private practice, or did you have like something else that was kind of what you thought you wanted to do?
I did. I wanted to go into private practice. I wanted to, like, my therapist.
Yeah.
And I think I'd had a couple by that time. I'm not sure. I had one for quite a long time. Yeah. So I liked that lifestyle. Also, that woman, the psychologist that I visited was in a private practice. And I kind of, yeah, that's kind of one thing that drew me, was having your office and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I got my, let's see, right after I graduated, I started doing private practice on the side and working full-time and then down to part-time.
Okay.
And then I learned that because of insurance issues and stuff, in Wisconsin, you couldn't work under someone else's license at the time.
Oh, okay.
And so you had to take private pay, and the marketing, I think, was just daunting. And I just, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't have a lot of support. I don't think there was a Facebook group. You know, I had the other students, and I were kind of, some older students, and I would consult with each other and kind of doing the same thing. But I did find a woman who went to be an office in her space, and she also agreed to be my supervisor. And she is a dear, wonderful woman, Patricia Diaria. I'm going to call her out.
Yeah.
An amazing therapist in Elm Grove, Wisconsin. She was very similar to me, so, you know, in terms of reviews. But then I decided I needed to get this license because I needed to make money.
I was used
to making money, and I couldn't, you know, couldn't really afford to do this. And so I did work at a agency that we did in-home therapy.
Yeah.
That was really, you know, I got my hours there. It was a great experience. It was good background experience to have. I wouldn't want that as a job. It was hard.
Sure.
It was rough. But and then I went and worked at a healthcare company, Aurora, that had hospitals. So they had a psychiatric hospital, and then they had outpatient and inpatient, partial and all that. But I worked in there outpatient. And so I did get a salary, but it was based on, it was based on VRUs. I don't know if anybody's heard of that.
No.
It was based on production. You had to have.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I was such an eye opener. I'm like, what, production therapist? That doesn't connect at all. But yeah, so you had to see a certain number of clients, and there was a no-show rate. So you had to schedule like 35 clients a week so that you could see 30.
Yeah.
It was kind of a assembly line kind of thing. They wanted you to just, you know, do the basic, end at 45 minutes, do your notes, take the next client.
Yeah.
And then I decided I wanted to move to Minnesota. Oh my gosh. do we have 3 hours? No. So then I be to move to Minnesota. So I was in Wisconsin, moved to Minnesota. The licensing wasn't going to work. So I ended up going and getting an LMFT certificate. So there again, I worked at this, you know, job, and then I went to that program at night.
Yeah.
But they helped me to do it.
Okay. So they had some support there for you.
Support there. Yeah. I guess I did quit that job while I was in Milwaukee, and I worked at a group practice. So I paid for an office a certain amount per month, and then I also got, you know, they took a percentage. And then when I moved here, I started my own practice. I thought I would be able to make, I always struggle with not making enough money, even though I was doing something that I really loved. I still wanted to make money, but I was used to that. And I always had to make a living, even though I'm in a relationship, but I still have to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, for my own stuff. So I came here and I got on as many insurances as I could. I rented my own office, and I got an EHR.
Yeah.
Legal practice. And that was kind of newer, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that was helpful. And I think it's been really helpful. And, you know, just really got clients pretty fast by being on the insurance, went through the pandemic, got burnt out. How many of you out there have actually had this thought during the pandemic? I'm a therapist. I can really serve during this time.
And
what else do I have to do but take clients?
Yep.
Oh, there we go.
And then you come through it and you're exhausted on the other side. Yes. 100%. I am raising my hand to that. And I know many listeners are as well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I did that. And then I decided I wanted my weekends back, and I just, but I still wanted to make good money. And
yeah.
And then I tried getting a raise from the insurance company, and I did get a raise from one insurance company, but then it got taken away when they raised it for everybody.
Oh.
But they raised it for everybody a lot lower than mine was.
Sure.
So then they brought me back down, and I was like, I am not going to keep asking you.
Right.
Guys. Also, I couldn't get on certain insurance panels that paid more because they were saturated in the area. So then I decided to, I heard about this program. It's called Lean In Make Bank. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
Because I wanted to go private pay, and they helped me with that. It's still a struggle. You know, it's a struggle to get clients at a higher rate and without insurance. But it's so much more rewarding. And I've actually, I think I mentioned how much I didn't want to do marketing.
Right.
I am doing so much marketing. It's like, what?
Yeah.
This isn't me.
Right. Well, and how does that, like, how has that transition been for you, I guess, mentally and emotionally almost? Because I know there's a lot of therapists that, I mean, I think all of us at some point struggle with, like, I want to make more. And for those of us that are on insurance panels, there is a lot of times this pull to get off the panels, to be private pay only. But, you know, we're reconciling that with, like, but there's, like, active clients coming in the door here, but, and I'm going to have to do more marketing, or, you know, what if I don't get enough clients private pay? Like, what was that mental kind of transition like for you?
Yeah. Oh, I was very optimistic, probably more than I, you know, more than it turned out, but I was very optimistic thinking that I could do this. I also knew people that were doing it, were doing private pay, literally people in my building even. And so I knew it was possible.
Yeah.
And so I was so burnt out that I thought, regardless, I need to have space, and I have too many clients right now, and I can't keep up. I also was, another thing I know all of us do is we come out of school and we take everything, every type of issue under the sun.
Yeah.
And we scurry with a book and we read all about it. We take a course, we learn it. Because we want to do the best we can for our clients.
We want to help everybody.
Yeah. And we take a course and, you know, we establish a trauma modality. Yep. We establish an anxiety modality. We establish all these modalities. And then, And that, but then it's so much work. It's so much
Yeah.
work outside of session.
Right.
So that was another thing, is to streamline and to kind of, and that was hard though. It was hard to give up certain types of
Yeah.
modalities.
Yeah.
And it
Yeah.
was
Either
hard.
you've put a lot of work into that, or maybe those are even clients you enjoy working with, but you realize I need to focus here so that you can be more efficient with your marketing then too.
Right. Yeah, and I love all of the, I mean, all the clients that I worked with, I loved working with generally. I can't
Yeah.
even, I mean, I just, to me, it was a, some were a challenge, right? And it's like,
Sure.
and I liked working with them because of that. And I liked working with some because I got to learn a lot about
Yeah.
that. But for a career, I don't know, it wasn't sustainable for me
Yeah.
or my, and then also I realized I moved to a new city and worked all the time and didn't meet anybody. So I didn't have any friends here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my family was all established, and it wasn't, it wasn't like they were knocking on my door every day.
Yeah.
So it was work. It was work to get
Sure.
in with my family. It was work to get time with my son, which who was used to not having his mom around, and
Right.
he's content, and but he likes being with me too. But it was kind of like I had to do the work.
Yeah.
And so, so it and I then I also stopped exercising. I stopped, all that.
Yeah.
So I had to get myself, my life back. So I
Yeah.
guess it wasn't because of the optimism and because of the desperation. I don't think I really struggle with doing it. I did have some backup savings,
Okay.
and I had a partner, so that was helpful to
Yeah.
know that he could back me up if I my money went
Sure.
lower. So that,
Sure.
a lot of people don't have that.
Right. But I think your point of having some kind of savings, like if you are going to be making that transition, just having that cushion, because I think sometimes people, I see this even when people are like just starting a practice, even if it is insurance based, they're like, okay, the doors are open and they expect like the phone, the phone line is set up now, the website is set up, like everybody's going to just start booking, and it doesn't always happen like that, right? Like you do have to market, you do have to put yourself out there, regardless of whether it is insurance or private pay. But especially when you are making that transition from insurance-based practice to private pay only, having that cushion to just be like, okay, I don't have to stress. Like I still need to be working to get those clients coming in, but I don't have to be just struggling to survive in the midst of that too.
And have that cushion. I mean, save up, put it in a high yield savings.
Yeah.
I just learned about those. I don't know if they're new, but I just learned about those last year, and I'm like, my gosh, I'm getting good interest.
Yeah, no,
4%,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And that's really fun to see your money go a little higher every month.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, so preparing is probably a good idea for someone who's not there yet.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, when I moved here, I moved here by myself. I moved here without a job, and I learned to live really like frugally.
Yeah.
And I was so driven to do it that I did, I was willing to do it. And
Sure.
so, I would go get a soup at a restaurant and cut it in half and eat half one day, like eat half
Yeah.
one day and half another day, but it was always a good restaurant,
Yeah.
good tasting soup. And that things like that are, I think if you want it bad enough, you'll live frugally for a while. But
Cut
then
back
the
where you
problem is,
can.
you
Yeah.
won't forever.
Yeah. So for those that are listening who are wondering, like, okay, I'm wrestling with taking the leap to moving to cash-based practice, private pay only, not taking insurance. If you had one thing to say to like encourage them or to like help them to like think through or to figure out before making that leap, like, what is one piece of advice that you would want them to know?
I guess, there's a couple things. Can I do a couple things?
Yeah, go, no, go right ahead.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The higher your rate is, the more marketing you're gonna do. So if you have a rate that's pretty like $100 a session, depending on the area, you're probably not going to have to do as much marketing as if your rate is like 250, 300, 200. And I would say two is have support, have other people that are doing it to, talk to. The program I was in gave me support. There's other ways to get support. Joining a group practice that's doing it, or having a supervisor, having a, you could even pay someone that's doing it to be a coach, or a friend that's doing it if you're lucky enough. There's some programs where you can get that support, because the program, like, there's programs where you create a website, but you're in a like a DIY website group, and those people are all usually private pay, so those are going to be supportive. So you can meet people. And then I wish I would have done more networking in the beginning. Do a lot of networking, get out there, get your name known. If you're already known, that's great. That's probably going to be beneficial.
Just making sure they know that you're making this change.
Yeah, that's true. And other, you're not going to probably get many referrals from therapists that take insurance. Think about yourself and what you're, if you're taking insurance now, would you refer to them, and who you'd refer to? And if you may or may not.
Yeah, that's a good point. That if a cash pay client is coming to someone that takes insurance, they're probably going to want that cash pay client unless it's totally out of their scope, right? That like if you're like, this is just not an area I'm trained in or not in my scope of practice, then yeah, they may not be referring out, or they may also be referring out. I mean, I have referred out if I'm so full, and like this is somebody else, but they do take. Or they don't take insurance, but you can always talk to them about a super bill or something like that, but I think to your point of like the strategies for marketing and really positioning yourself are going to vary depending on what your price point is of your cash rate. And I think that's really important to note that like if your practice, like you said, if you are $100 a session versus $300 a session, it's going to be totally different strategies, totally different message. It may sound like common sense, but like each practice is different. And so what works for one person may not work for somebody else. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't work for you, but you may just have to take that thing and, twist it or pivot it or, just evolve it in a different way to make that work as a strategy for you. The core piece of it may, be the same, but it's not going to be identical, especially if you're at just different price points with your practice.
And I would say too is if there's people that want to do therapy, not only do in session, one-on-one in session therapy, and want to spread their knowledge out more, then private pay is a really good way to go, because you meet so many people that you get so many ideas. And when you're taking insurance, you're so busy that you maybe. But you're kind of in a you're you enter a new world and a new type of, like, a therapreneur is what we'll call it. And you are a therapeneur already, but it's more, you're more out there when you're not, you don't have that, it's all up to you. It's not up to the insurance and stuff. So that's pretty cool. So if you want to do that, then I'd say it could be a like jump off point,
Absolutely.
for that.
Well, Beth, if listeners want to connect with you more, where would be the best place for them to find you?
Well, they could, I guess, email me at elizabeth@fireflycounselingmn.com. My website is fireflycounselingmn.com. So if they went to my website, they could do a connect to me. So that would probably be the best.
And we'll have that and your social media linked in the show notes so that if people do want to connect with you more, they can do that there. Beth, I really thank you for coming and talking with me today, bearing with me with Ellie. Yes. Slept most of the time.
She was so quiet.
She slept most of the time. She just woke up. But but I really appreciate you taking the time and you know, sharing your experience of just your journey in motherhood. And I think it's always really interesting to talk as women where like you're at a very different point in your motherhood journey than I am per se, but that the themes are still the same in a lot of ways, or that like there are things that I can learn from you, you know, in what you went through as a mother, you know, of small children years ago that maybe I'm actively in right now. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's always just great to be able to connect as women, as moms, sure, regardless of what the age of our children are, because, you know, yes, you know, the core pieces are still there.
Yeah. And those women that have been there too, they could, like my mom's friend, I mean, they can be very helpful too. So
yeah,
they could help out. I mean, you guys you're doing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us here today.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.